Support comes from the Norton Simon Museum, presenting I Saw It, Francisco de Goya, Printmaker. This exhibition features all four of the Spanish artists' major print series in their entirety for the first time on the West Coast. Now on view. More at NortonSimon.org.
You have the chance to win a Spring Super Sweeps from LAist. Donate $60 for one entry to win a brand new Lexus or $25,000 in cash. Check out all the other prizes, too, when you donate now at LAist.com/sweeps.
A good Sunday to you. This is the weekend edition of the LA Report. I'm Julia Paskin, and on today's show, Pomona College politics professor Sarah Sadwani talks to AirTalk's Larry Mantle about what the decision to overturn Roe v. Wade means for the midterm elections. But first, here's a look at what's happening around Los Angeles. The West Hollywood City Council is making another cut to the number of deputies the city pays for under its contract with the LA County Sheriff's Department, cutting two positions by October. The city's current contract costs nearly $20 million and includes 60 sworn personnel. The move comes after some organizers, residents, and officials called for reduced spending on policing. Nika Soon-Shiong is a West Hollywood Public Safety Commissioner.
We have seen no effect of an increased investment in this department's services on crime or on perceptions of safety and fear. Instead, what we should do is reduce the number of deputies that the city is paying for and invest in foot patrols of unarmed security ambassadors.
The city cut three deputy positions last year and is considering cutting three more next spring, but that determination will be made as early as March after an analysis of crime trends. The move this week also adds a deputy to the team responsible for nightlife safety. At the same time, West Hollywood will hire 30 unarmed guards as part of its block-by-block security ambassador program. The city will also explore reducing Sheriff's Department patrols during its annual Pride Parade. And in a statement, the Sheriff's Department says it's disappointed by the cuts. And the California Highway Patrol is in high enforcement through the July 4th holiday. The agency says it's made close to 300 arrests across the state starting Friday at 6 to last night. Cloudy mornings today and on the 4th, especially by the coasts. Temperatures going up to the high 60s at the beaches through the holiday, high 70s inland, low 80s in the valleys in LA and Orange counties. Hotter in the IE, though, going up to the high 80s and even the mid to high 90s in the desert. Oof, Palm Springs is going to hit 101. The effects of climate change are no longer a warning from a distant future. We're feeling the impact of a changing climate today, especially in the warming and drying of our landscape. Marta Segura is in charge of how the city of LA responds to these changes as the director of the Climate Emergency Mobilization Office. She's also the city's chief heat officer, a title shared with very few others across the country. Marta Segura joins us now to talk about the city's plan for extreme heat. Marta, thanks so much for being with us.
Glad to be here.
So you are the City of LA's first chief heat officer. Can you tell us what this new role entails and why the position was created?
It's an expansion of my current role as the director of the Climate Emergency Mobilization Office. The added value of the role is it will drive collaboration and coordination across the entire city to address extreme heat, because the city already has different programs and departments that are dealing with it separately, but we want to have a seamless, coordinated approach to ensure that our community sees the programs that we have, uses the programs that we have, and is able to take advantage of the investments that we will be making to mitigate heat.
And with climate change, we're already seeing that an already hot LA is getting even hotter. Just recently, it's been pretty hot. Can you talk about looking at extreme heat as a threat to public health?
Yeah, as you likely know, City of LA is in an urban heat island where the heat waves are six times more frequent than they once were. And not only that, but the heat waves are longer. So they were used to be one day or two day. Now they're 3 days longer. So that makes it harder for our bodies to recover from the heat. So there's more heat exhaustion, there's more hospitalizations, there's more deaths occurring as a result of being exhausted by the heat exposure, particularly in vulnerable communities where we have more renters, less air conditioning, more density, higher air pollution, which stagnates actually when there is a heat wave. So those that already have issues with asthma or COPD or heart disease are much more likely to end up in the hospital or experience early deaths as a result of the exposure to extreme heat. So we're really trying to address the investments and the education in the most vulnerable communities, because that's where we're seeing the highest numbers of hospitalizations. We think of summer and heat waves, but unfortunately, they're extending all the way through mid-November. So we have to prepare our workers and our schools and our communities to plan ahead.
Are there certain parts of the city of LA that are even more negatively affected by heat?
Yes. Areas like the San Fernando Valley, areas of South LA and the Harbor area, East Los Angeles, Boyle Heights, those areas have urban heat islands because they lack tree canopy, and also because they have low-income communities that tend to live in apartment buildings that have less air cooling, they have less energy efficiency. They also experience those vulnerabilities that I was talking about earlier, those illnesses like asthma and heart disease or kidney disease that make them much more vulnerable to these heat waves. So we are definitely mapping that through a climate vulnerability assessment that the city will be conducting with the Department of City Planning. And we will be targeting our strategic investments and infrastructure investments and even our education and our social media campaigns to areas that we feel are more vulnerable. But make no mistake, all of Los Angeles is vulnerable. It's just that some communities have more resources to mitigate the heat waves throughout the day, and other communities need additional resources.
We're talking with LA City Chief Heat Officer Marta Segura. What else is your office working on right now to provide immediate help to people endangered by extreme heat?
We're creating a heat action plan where we're going to coordinate with Public Works to create cooler neighborhoods and transform the city's outside infrastructure so that we have more shade, more hydration stations, more cool roofs, more cool surfaces that will reduce the impact of the urban heat island. We're going to be strategically planting shade trees, not in terms of quantity, but in terms of quality, so that we get the shade trees that we need in the areas that most need them. So those are all examples of this kind of urban acupuncture where we can change the landscape, change the infrastructure in order to cool down our city. And if you look at the heat maps that JPL and NASA create, it tends to be hotter where you see less tree canopies. So we're learning a lot from these heat maps to ensure that we're also putting our cooling centers and our cooling spots in those areas as well.
That's LA City Chief Heat Officer and Director of the Climate Emergency Mobilization Office, Marta Segura. Marta, thank you so much for making time. This has been very interesting. Really appreciate it.
I'm really grateful that you're spreading this information and helping us do the outreach and communications that's so needed. Thank you so much.
And speaking of heat, it's going to be over 100 degrees in Palm Springs all week. And in the city of LA, thankfully, it'll be a little cooler here, staying in the low 80s through Friday. Fireworks are illegal in the city of L.A., and officials are reminding people of the potential dangers of pyrotechnics. L.A. Fire Captain Eric Scott says fireworks injuries can make one of the busiest times of the year for the department.
And the sad part of that is 40% of those firework-related injuries, they occur to the young people, to the kids. And so those are often the ones that we're seeing have this debilitating, painful injury, most often to fingers, hands, secondarily, eyes and ears.
Scott suggests leaving the fireworks up to the professionals. And KPCC's Zoe Kurland has more on how animals are impacted by fireworks.
Wherever you end up this 4th of July, the beach, the pool, a backyard barbecue, one thing's for certain, you're sure to hear the festive crackle and boom of fireworks overhead. However, pets and wildlife may not find this experience so celebratory.
It's probably life or death for them. You have to remember that our cats and our dogs, their sense of hearing is beyond our comprehension.
PETA's Crystal Silmi says a survival instinct kicks in for animals when they hear fireworks, and they'll try to escape wherever they are, running into highways or traffic. Silmi says it's best to stay home with your pets to keep them from getting hurt or scared, but if you can't, you want to set them up for success indoors.
You want to close the windows, close the curtains. You can put on, you know, fans or air conditioning, any kind of soothing sound that's going to help them feel safe. Like anytime I leave the house, I actually will play like classical music for my dog.
For more tips, head to PETA.org. I'm Zoe Curland.
75 people turned 673 pounds of illegal fireworks in at a buyback event in Mission Hills yesterday. LA city officials say that's 31% more than last year's buyback event. The illegal fireworks were handed over, no questions asked, in exchange for items including gift cards to Starbucks and Target, as well as Dodger tickets. In a statement, councilperson Monica Rodriguez says she looks forward to expanding the fireworks buybacks in her area next year. Blue whales have been spotted off the coast of Southern California, some with juveniles. This region is a seasonal stop for the migrating mammals. They come to chow down on literally tons of krill a day, and as the biggest animals on Earth, they need a lot of food. The behemoths get to be more than 100 feet long. For reference, that's about the length of a hockey rink or the height of a 10-story building. So if you spot them while whale watching, you're in for a sight.
They'll come to the rivers, you'll see the big blowhole, you'll see the water go everywhere, everybody go, ooh, ah.
That's Shelby Bloom, who studies whales at Scripps Institution of Oceanography. She uses recording instruments to hear what sounds they make below the surface.
Most of their life, obviously, they're going to be underwater, so most of everything we really can't see. That's why it's really important to have these acoustic instruments, because that's how we're really going to study these animals.
And here's a sample of what she's captured. Bloom says blue whales have been recorded making sounds in our waters when they're foraging for food. More LA Report in a moment.
Support for LAist comes from the Norton Simon Museum, presenting I Saw It, Francisco de Goya, Printmaker. This fascinating exhibition features all four of the Spanish artist's major print series in their entirety for the first time on the West Coast. With over 200 prints on view, this exhibition offers insight into the artist's creative process and the full range of his expressive capacity. Now on view. More information at nortonsimon.org.
Imagine if you could charge your electric vehicle at the places you already love to eat, shop, and play. Whether you're at the movies, on your weekly grocery trip, or running errands at your local mall, Volta EV charging stations are built around your day-to-day and located in your community and nationwide. All you have to do is check in, plug in, and go about your day. It's EV charging made convenient. Download the Volta app to find your new favorite place to charge.
The U.S. Supreme Court's ruling overturning Roe v. Wade didn't come as a surprise, given the leak of a draft opinion in May indicating that was coming. But it still sent shockwaves throughout the country. Many Republicans celebrated the decision, calling it a win for life. For Democrats and abortion rights supporters, it's a rallying cry to take the fight for reproductive care to the polls. California lawmakers have moved to defend access to abortion and contraceptives, with an amendment to enshrine that in the state's constitution going before voters in November. This week, Sarah Sadwani, a professor of politics at Pomona College, joined Air Talk host Larry Mantle to discuss what the decision means for the midterms in California and beyond.
We turn our attention now, though, to the potential impact on the November elections of Friday's U.S. Supreme Court ruling overturning Roe v. Wade. Rafe Sonnenschein, the executive director of the Pat Brown Institute of Public Affairs at Cal State Los Angeles, joined us several weeks ago and said that he anticipated that Supreme Court decision would have huge reverberations, huge impact on the election, and the Democrats would turn out in a way they wouldn't have otherwise because of their dismay over the Supreme Court decision. Of course, November is still a long way away, but joining us to take on that topic and share her thoughts on it is Pomona College politics professor Sarah Sadwani. Professor, so good to have you with us again. We appreciate it very much. Let's talk first about California races. We've got a North LA County congressional race, a couple of big Orange County congressional races. Could the decision on Roe v. Wade be a difference maker in those matchups in those purple districts?
Yeah, Larry, thanks so much for having me. I think you're absolutely right, right? Where we will see Roe, this decision to overturn Roe take effect is most certainly going to be in these more competitive districts. These are battleground districts where people are fighting for every last vote. And in the past, we've seen some of the districts, obviously they've changed a little bit due to redistricting, but we've seen people, the outcomes of these elections really come down to just a handful of votes. This is absolutely an opportunity for Democrats to organize and mobilize within these districts. That being said, I think what we're also seeing nationally is that there's some dismay about the state of affairs that we're in. Roe is not the only issue on the ballot this fall. Certainly, it will be a prominent one, but we also have the ongoing January 6th hearings. We have gun violence. We have out-of-control inflation. So there's a host of issues that are going to be in front of voters as we move towards November. And as you said, November's still a ways away.
Long way away.
Yeah, voters tend to be a little fickle, and sometimes we forget about the pressing issues that are in front of us.
Sarah, we think of Republicans as being highly animated to vote because of what they saw as the Supreme Court not reflecting their values and the longstanding complaints among Republicans about activist judges more partisan than adherent to law. Now we've heard a flip of that with Democrats saying that about this conservative dominant court and concerns about activist judges and the future of the Supreme Court and rulings that may be to come. And so do you anticipate that we will see essentially a mirror image of what we saw before, or are there fundamental differences in how the parties relate to the Supreme Court?
I think we are seeing that reversal, right? That these judges are showing their true colors. And most of these justices during their Senate confirmation said that they saw Roe v. Wade as being settled law. Obviously, they're changing their tune now. And I think there's a lot of things that could be on the chopping block for the future. Certainly things like same.
I think we just lost. Oh, there she is. Just lost you for a moment. You were going to say same-sex marriage.
Yeah. So we can certainly anticipate that there could be additional issues that could be on the chopping block in the very near future. Certainly things on the Voting Rights Act, ensuring the ability to have fair representation for communities of color that have been historically excluded. Certainly same-sex marriage and other issues, social issues that we anticipated being settled could make a comeback. And all of those issues could certainly galvanize voters, even here in Southern California. If we think about the race down in the Riverside area that Ken Calvert, the sitting member of Congress, is running against a Democratic challenger, Will Rollins, who is out as a gay man and certainly a part of the work on January 6th and the prosecution for January 6th. These are issues that are going to matter to voters in that region.
We're talking with Pomona College professor of politics, Sarah Sadwani, joining us on Air Talk, our focus on what the potential effect will be in November of the Supreme Court's overturning of Roe v. Wade in that huge decision last Friday. I was struck, though, Professor, by how it seemed that the biggest protests were in the states where abortion is going to continue to be legal. And it doesn't seem that in the states that have laws going into effect limiting or banning abortion, there was as much protest. And I wonder, in the states where a bigger Democratic turnout could have the most potential effect, in California it's of limited effect except in these competitive races, whether that sort of in some way attenuates the power of Democratic voting in November in other locations?
I think that's certainly a real challenge. And I think the challenge Democrats are going to have in all of these places, particularly in these competitive districts where they have an opportunity to win. And of course, again, we're coming off of redistricting nationwide. So many of these same states that have these trigger laws in effect that are already limiting the ability for folks to access abortion services. Many people were being disenfranchised in those districts already, even before this decision. So it's really going to come down to organizing, right? It comes down to knocking on doors. And, you know, just anecdotally, I'm actually working on a book project. I've been talking with a lot of voters and local community organizations in places like Georgia and Texas. And, you know, one of the things that we've seen is there has been a huge infrastructure that has been built to varying success for the Democratic Party, but a large organizing infrastructure in these places ever since 2016. I've been talking with voters who are talking about, you know, after the 2016 election and the election of Donald Trump, I just couldn't sit silent any longer. And I'm curious how many people are out there sitting perhaps silently or quietly, not knowing what to do, but also feeling like, this is ridiculous, right? When I've talked with folks, they say, wow, I can't imagine that myself, my daughter, are going to have fewer rights today than they did in the 1970s. So, you know, the challenge is really for Democrats to get out there and knock on the door of that suburban woman who's quietly thinking to herself that this is ridiculous, but not knowing what to do about it.
Well, and the trend that we've seen of people re-registering, changing party, has favored Republicans pretty sizably. So that indicates some degree of dissatisfaction with the Democratic Party. How much does that potentially counter the enthusiasm to vote Democratic because of the SCOTUS decision?
You know, there's so many issues happening right now, right? And a lot of those folks, you know, the reporting that I've seen on the people switching parties towards the Republicans has largely been in response to the COVID restrictions, that people are tired of wearing a mask. They're tired of having lockdowns and really feeling like Democrats have mismanaged the COVID pandemic situation and adding to it the current state of the economy and the inflation that we're facing. So voters are going to have a host of issues in front of them. It's not clear what ones are going to be the ones that most galvanize them come November. Certainly this Roe decision, as you kind of note, is going to galvanize folks here in a place like Los Angeles. We can think about the impact it might have on the LA mayoral race, for example. Less clear, you know, rural women in Idaho, if that's going to be an organizing tool for them.
Or suburban women, because they carry huge clout in elections.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And so I think people will have a host of issues that they're going to have to be looking at and thinking about. And as we said at the top of this, it's only June, right? There's many months to go, and voters are being inundated by critical issues, right? The Russian invasion of Ukraine, January 6th, gun violence, inflation, gas prices. It's almost a dizzying array of issues that people are trying to wrap their heads around. Yep. In terms of what direction is best for our country.
Hans in Eagle Rock says not only will it affect Angelenos, but it'll make L.A. residents reach out to their relatives and friends in other states. And we have another listener comment from Michael in San Dimas. I've become disillusioned by Democrats not doing anything. I feel like many others have become disillusioned as well. My vote will go to a progressive or somebody that will do something, literally anything. It's been 2 years of the party not doing anything to address any of the pressing issues that we face.
Hey, thanks for listening to this Sunday edition of the LA Report. Suzanne Whatley and Nick Roman will be back on Tuesday with the weekday morning and afternoon editions. Until then, have a happy and safe 4th of July. Don't forget to try to take it easy. I'm Julia Paskin. The LA Report is produced and mixed by Michael Cosentino. The LA Weekend Report is edited by Claudia Piscuta, engineered by Sean Campbell, and the associate producer is Zoe Kurland. On weekdays, the LA Report is engineered by Brandon Bowles and Tui Mao. Special thanks to the reporters, editors, and the entire KPCC LAist newsroom.
This program is made possible in part by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, a private corporation funded by the American people. The LAist Spring Super Sweeps is happening now. You can win amazing prizes while supporting your source for local fact-based journalism. One lucky grand prize winner will get to choose a brand new Lexus or $25,000 in cash. Other prizes include an electric bike from Juice Bikes and $1,000 gas gift cards. Your donation of $60 gets you one entry to win. And the more you give, the more entries you get. Donate now at LAist.com/sweeps.